Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
And now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop, all the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. It is the week in review. All topics are valid. I got a lot on my mind. I know you have things on your mind as well. If you want to join in the discussion, just pick up the phone. Dial 877-4HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. I'm always glad to hear from you. And always glad when you call. Here's what's on my mind today. I want to focus on what is going on at the Justice Department. Now, I have long talked about the use of politics in the Justice Department under Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez. Harriet Myers, of course, refuses to talk about it. But it seems that they have truly made the entire thing a political base. They have taken the criminal justice system and made it into another arm of the Bush reelection campaign. I'm going to give you some details about that. Then on to the Supreme Court, which has given some mixed rulings, interesting rulings actually, saying that a child rapist cannot be given the death penalty, which I thought about a long time before I say I think I do support the decision, to typical protecting corporate interests with whittling down the punitive damages in the Valdez oil spill. To Charlie Black, now you must know by now what he has said. Basically, how the McCain campaign wants a terrorist attack. Can't wait for it, in fact, because it would be a big advantage to John McCain. Whether or not that's true, and we'll talk about that, I want to focus on how it is that the Bush administration can actually manipulate the timing of terrorist information, of attack information, and use it to control a campaign. Exactly, I guess, what Charlie Black's plan is. On to the Middle East, we have Israel trying desperately to make peace with Syria, with Lebanon, with Gaza, and already, Hamas has broken the truce and rained three missiles, not one, not two, but three, on an Israeli town of Sderot. I think it's about time that Israel give up on negotiating with people that are dedicated to its destruction. It just doesn't make any sense. And if they reoccupy Gaza, it'd probably be best for the Gazans who are living under Hamas rule. Also, we have a detainee who has been freed. Finally, after 6 years in Guantanamo Bay, we give him a trial, and lo and behold, guess what? He wasn't guilty after all. Oops. Oops. Maybe that's why we actually need trials in America, or even in Guantanamo, to find out who's guilty. Toll-free number 877-4HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. Let's start about what's going on at Justice. Now, I know you've been following along for years now. We've talked about the prosecutor scandal, and you know how we've had several justices, not justices, several people at the Justice Department using their power of hiring and firing to control the criminal justice system. Now, traditionally, the criminal justice system is controlled at its top by the President of the United States, but it was always understood that people would be hired and fired based on merit. In other words, if you're a good prosecutor, you get hired. Maybe you've got a lot of convictions, successful convictions, and if you're a lousy trial lawyer, well, you know, you don't get hired. You don't get promoted. The same is true with the honors program. In other words, when you get new people who are trying to work, trying to do their best to fight crime in America, you base who you hire on the qualifications of the people there. Seems obvious. We now know, of course, that there were a number of prosecutors fired for doing the unthinkable. People like San Diego U.S. Attorney Carol Lam, who did the unthinkable. She actually prosecuted Randy Duke Cunningham for bribery. Now, Duke Cunningham had taken, of course, millions of dollars in exchange for giving political favors. He even had a list, a price list, somewhat like a menu you'd see in a restaurant. You want me to fix a bill? costs you this much. You want me to, throw some federal money your way, it costs you this much. You want to buy me, put me in your pocket, and carry me away and have me do your every bidding, well, that costs this much. And, of course, Randy Cunningham is the one, famously, who used the money to have gold-plated toilet seats and things such as that. Well, you can't have U.S. attorneys prosecute Republicans for bribery simply because it's against the law. True, I guess we don't want our politicians owned by corporate interests. That's the law, but they're Republicans. And therefore, they're supposed to be owned by corporate interests. That's the way the Republican Party works. San Diego U.S. Attorney Carol Lam was shown the door. The same is true with David Iglesias of New Mexico, who refused to make up stuff, to make up crimes against Democrats in New Mexico. In Missouri, Bradley Schlossman was making up crimes against people in the state of Missouri. He made up that the voting registration campaign was fraudulent, and he filed an action against people registering people to vote. Think about it. Their only crime was registering people to vote. My God, what would he have done to Martin Luther King? Anyway, tried it just a few days before the election in express violation of Justice Department guidelines. He, of course, was promoted. He didn't, however, succeed in doing what he had managed to do, what he had attempted to do, and that was to get Senator Jim Talent reelected. Instead, Senator Claire McCaskill barely eked out a victory. But, oh, he tried so hard. Case after case, place after place, you know the story. On to, of course, Alabama, where the wife, it's so ugly here, the wife of the Republican gubernatorial candidate actually put the Democratic governor in jail, Don Siegelman, who was just released because, heck, they made it all up. Anyway, you know what's gone on at the prosecutor level. You know that Harriet Myers, the presidential counsel, has refused to talk about it. You know, as I said yesterday, that the judge, the Bush-appointed judge, said to Congress, why don't you get some cojones? Well, he didn't use that word, cojones. He may have used the word gumption, but basically said, get some balls, Democrats in Congress. If you want to enforce congressional rights, then what do you do? You put the people who break the law in jail. In other words, you round up Harriet Myers, putative Supreme Court nominee, and you frog march her over to the Capitol, where you stick her in an office, because, you know, the jail cell doesn't exist anymore. You lock her up, you feed her, you leave her there until she talks. Well, it turns out it's not just at the U.S. attorney level. No, it has trickled on down through the career attorneys, God, I got something in my voice today. Through the career attorneys all the way down to the lowest of the interns, to the newest hirees. Now, as a lawyer, I can tell you that the Justice Department's honors program is one of the most prestigious things that you can start as a beginning attorney if you want to fight the bad guys, if you want to work as a prosecutor. And I have tremendous respect for prosecutors. They do an often thankless job of getting criminals off the streets. They make cases against some pretty violent, dangerous people, and they also have the awesome responsibility of sometimes deciding not to bring a case, deciding that the evidence is not sufficient to bring to a jury. It's a power over life and death, and it's one that every single prosecutor I know takes extremely seriously. Very, very powerful. Well, we now know from a report by the Justice Department Inspector General, so the Justice Department's own internal watchdog guy, as well as the Office of Professional Responsibility, that civil service laws, the ones that say you have to hire someone based on merit, were broken right and left and center again and again and again. And the people that broke the laws were the people that were doing the hiring. And what's so interesting is the great majority of the documents proving this disappeared. They were destroyed. Now, in the law, when you destroy documents prior to a trial, that's called, well, the destruction of evidence. And when you destroy evidence, that is a count for obstruction of justice. In other words, as they found with Scooter Libby, sometimes you can't prove the guy killed someone. But when you find that he destroyed the murder weapon and he hid the body and he cleaned up the blood, you have reason to believe that he not only obstructed justice, but probably did the underlying murder. In this case, most of the evidence was gone, but there was still substantial evidence left. They just couldn't scrub it all. For example, steering committee member Esther Slater McDonald. Oh, that sounds like an awfully prestigious name. Esther Slater McDonald deemed unacceptable an applicant because the applicant professed admiration for Green Action, an environmental group. Right, if you support the environment, you cannot work as a prosecutor. Also, there was another one. That one had ties to the Poverty and Race Research Action Council. Now think about it. Someone who wants to research poverty and research race, and maybe even research the connections between poverty and race, such a person is not allowed to work in our Justice Department. No, McDonald complained in one of the few emails that she forgot to destroy about, quote, leftist commentary and buzzwords, unquote, in the applications. Leftist commentary and buzzwords. I guess if you care about the environment, if you're concerned about race, and if you're concerned about poverty, then you are a leftist, and you have no right to be in the American government. Please understand, these are not political jobs. I understand and I respect the right of the President of the United States, though I would prefer one that's fairly elected according to the Constitution. But let's say you have a president that's elected according to the Constitution and not the current occupant. Certainly a president has a right to put his or her political cronies at the highest levels of the administration to decide, for example, that he or she wants an environmental protection manager who hates the environment, or a civil rights leader of the civil rights division who hates civil rights. Or perhaps you have a labor or education secretary who hates labor and hates education. That's what Republicans do. That's fair. That's politics. But the Justice Department has, for hundreds of years, prided itself on its civil service, prided itself on the fact that in matters of justice, there is no right or left. There's only right or wrong. There is no Republican or Democrat. There's only the best candidates for the job. And that's the way it was until 2002. Yes, from the beginning of America till 2002, the intern jobs, honors jobs, really all jobs, including that of a friend of mine who works in the Justice Department, they're given based on quality, based on intelligence, based on expertise, based on who could put people away. No, well, that was changed in 02. And the biggest one doing the change is the same guy in charge of the prosecutors, the same guy who fired Carol Lam and David Iglesias, who promoted Bradley Schlossman, made sure that Governor Siegelman was put in jail in Alabama. This is all Michael Elston, the former chief of staff to the deputy attorney general. Now, of course, we know that the deputy attorney general was actually kind of a stand-up guy, right? This is the guy who said who defended John Ashcroft when John Ashcroft said, we don't want to break the law. And Attorney General Gonzalez wanted to with the warrantless wiretapping program. Well, now it seems that they were working out from under him. And Michael Elston denied a Stanford Law School applicant because she'd written a law review article about gender discrimination in the military. So, Republicans, let's get this straight. They hate the environment, they hate black people, they hate poor people, and they hate people who care about gender discrimination in the military. So, yes, they hate women. Who else was fired? Well, let's see. We've got people who had a appellate clerkship with a Democratic judge. We have other people who, a paralegal who worked for Planned Parenthood. This was a former justice summer intern and a Harvard Law School graduate. So one of the best law schools in the country, someone who'd actually worked for the Justice Department before, and the chief of the Justice Department's Civil Division personally called Elston after many, many applicants to his unit were denied and said, what about this one? Couldn't do it. She had once worked as a paralegal at Planned Parenthood. In fact, the study shows that hundreds of applicants, you know, there are only, I don't even know that there are 100 people hired every year to work for the Honors Program. Maybe there are a couple hundred. Hundreds of applicants were rejected for political reasons. In other words, we've got a whole group of prosecutors, U.S. attorneys, civil servants, who now work for our government solely on the basis of their political views, not because they're good attorneys, not because they're intelligent, not because they care about fighting crime, not because they care about America at all, but solely, in fact, because their loyalty to to the president trumps their loyalty to the country. I've got some advice for President Obama, should he become our next president. I think he needs to clean house. He needs to fire every single one of them. Now, some decent prosecutors may be fired, but how can you separate the wheat from the chaff? The entire process was done illegally, and we now know they broke the law. Now, the report says you can't punish Michael Elston and Esther Slater McDonald. You can't punish them because, well, they're no longer in government. They're now doing well as high-paid attorneys. They got out because finally, the pressure from the Democrats and the media and the public was too great. Finally, we got rid of Alberto Lapdog Gonzalez and put in Michael Mukasey, who, whatever you think about him, is not the president's lapdog in the way that Gonzalez was. In other words, he only agrees with the president 98% of the time, not 110%. In any case, my advice to Obama, fire them all, and then let them submit their applications and let them have a chance to be rehired, not on the basis of their time at the Justice Department, but based on their education, their qualifications, along with everybody else, because we need this fairness in government. Part of the problem when you have a illegally obtained job, such as, President of the United States, after December 2000, is that there's all kinds of ripples from that, right? I mean, the United States Supreme Court illegally chose George Bush to be president in 2000, and he appointed members of the U.S. Supreme Court, like Roberts and Alito and half the bench, and he put in a whole bunch of people that illegally now supposedly are protected by civil service laws. I say no. I say they're not protected at all. It has been found by the own Justice Department's Inspector General, all these people were illegally hired. They've all got to be fired. Sorry, folks. But maybe your loyalty should have been to your country rather than to the Republican Party. You got to clean house. Just like, George Bush should never have been allowed to take office. But we all know my feelings about 2000. If you want to call in, the toll-free number is 877-4-HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. Moving on to the U.S. Supreme Court decisions that came down. One of the most interesting ones, I don't think should be seen as a left or right decision, though invariably it is, and that is the case of whether or not a child rapist should be subject to the death penalty. This is a man that was found guilty by a jury beyond reasonable doubt. I assume he was guilty. I know of no suggestions that he's innocent or that the evidence was incomplete. So let's take the Louisiana jury at its word and make clear that the stepfather of an 8-year-old girl brutally raped her. It's a crime that makes you queasy, makes me queasy. It makes me want revenge. It makes me want to see this guy put away for life. And personally, I have no problem with a guy like that getting executed. But when you have a system of laws, you have to look out not just for the particular victim and not just for the particular perpetrator, but ask yourself whether it serves an entire system of justice. Child advocates strongly are against the execution of child rapists, and you might want to ask why. And the reason is because children one, are notoriously susceptible to manipulation. You could get a child to accuse someone of a crime without the child really knowing what they're doing. Unfortunately, we see in divorce cases all the time parents try and manipulate children into testimony for one or for the other. But the other thing is really very easy, very simple to understand. If a child is raped and the man gets life imprisonment, and a child is murdered and a man gets death, then there's no incentive. Then there is an incentive for the rapist not to kill the child. But if he gets a death penalty either way, the incentive is to kill the child. Partly because of another Supreme Court decision I'll talk about in just a minute. First, I want to get to the lines I always like when people call in. Kevin from New York, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Hi. The whole thing with the Justice Department, I just want to add,
yeah,
it also goes on
please,
the local level, local government too.
Well, it depends, Kevin. There are two levels. There are two levels in government, whether it's local or state or federal. And there is the political appointees at the top,
yeah, and, the civil
and then there are the civil servants in the median and the bottom. And civil service laws are supposed to protect people from politics.
And you're exactly right. But I'm saying the Justice Department is not the only place that's doing it. Schools are doing it. School districts are doing it. And it's something that has been risen in the past 8 years.
Well, actually, Kevin, it's been around probably as old as the Republic. But the reason we have civil service laws, for example, schools that you're talking about, if you have a teacher who has been hired or fired based on his or her political views, that teacher, if he or she can prove it, can go to court and say, hey, wait a minute, you can fire me or hire me based on the quality of my teaching, but you can't hire or fire me based on my political views, unless, you know, I mean, there are some extreme examples where someone's advocating really extreme views, something like that. But generally, you're not supposed to do that. You think, Kevin, it's rampant everywhere?
Well, I'm agreeing with you. I'm just saying it's rampant on every level of government. It's been on the rise for the past 8 years. Years ago, I worked for a city agency, and the head of the department totally wasn't qualified, and I won't say who or what agency, but no background whatsoever. And that person was on basically a political appointee. They had no business running the department they're in.
That person was close to the mayor or close to whoever did the appointing in that case?
Yes. Matter of fact, ran their campaign or big.
Ah, how convenient. Well, you're right, Kevin. I don't want to say it's only in the federal government.
Yeah.
It is at all levels. But I'll say this. I'm against it wherever it occurs. And
exactly.
The Justice Department really was pretty good about it. I can recall in the 90s when the Clinton had the Justice Department, and they would appoint people who have right-wing views solely on the basis of their qualifications, you know, how they did in law school and what kind of cases they'd won and things like that. And the problem is that if you got Clinton and the Democrats appointing people based on merit, and you have Republicans appointing people based on ideology, then you get a skewed ideology. I mean, at least if you have Clinton appointing judges based on their political views and Bush appointing judges based on their political views, at least they balance themselves out. Of course, Bush didn't win the election. That's another problem. But at least, you know, you have political appointees balancing themselves out. That's why Bill Clinton fired all the U.S. attorneys of Bush's father, Bush Sr., when he put in his staff into place. And that's fair. But at the civil service level, then you end up with a civil service that instead of trying to do its job is trying to do things like punish people for having democratic views. So, I mean, I agree with you. It is at all levels.
Because the funny thing was, and this is the constant argument I used to get from these people, they hate big government, but yet they're working for the government. So I'll say, quit your job.
I'm sorry, they'll say who to quit their job.
I would tell them quit their job if they hate big government.
Oh, yeah, no, that's another thing that's always interesting to me, is that, you know, the same people who are trying to run for government and saying government can't work and can't possibly succeed are in charge. So, you know, it takes someone who profoundly doesn't believe in government to appoint an Arabian horse trader to be in charge of federal emergency management, right? I mean, basically they appoint a bunch of incompetent losers to run the government and they say, see, Told you government doesn't work.
Or a former Rose instructor to run an IT department.
Excuse me, a former...
aerobics instructor to run
an IT instructor to do an IT department. Well, yeah, look, I don't mean to say this is only at the federal level. I agree it's at local levels. It's at state levels. I just think it should be rooted out wherever it is. And it's a shame that our highest and most important justice department, you know, the federal U.S. Justice Department, has gone to this, because that hasn't happened in many, many years.
Well, it occurs mostly in red states, I must say. Unfortunately.
Well, no, it happens in blue states, too. I mean, look, you know, New Jersey is an awfully blue Democratic state, but it certainly wins its own awards for corruption. It does occur everywhere. I just want to root it out wherever it occurs.
Okay.
Thanks for your call, Kevin. I appreciate it.
Bye.
Folks, if you want to call in like Kevin did, just pick up the phone, make your point. Agree or disagree, 877-4HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. Let me finish talking about the child rapist case. I do think it's very interesting. The Supreme Court based its decision on, of course, the Eighth Amendment, which prohibits cruel and unusual punishment. And the focus in that clause is obviously on the perpetrator, on the criminal. And I think an argument can be made that there are levels of viciousness. No one would argue that a child rapist is not evil. Clearly, I could say he or she, but I've never heard of a case where a woman rapes a child. There may be one. Let's just say he. I mean, he is either evil or a very, very sick man. And, of course, we do have insanity laws and things like that. But there are levels of evil. And, yes, as awful as rape is, murder is worse. Rape, as awful as it can be for the victim can overcome it. No murder victim can overcome his or her murder. And, of course, there are levels of murder, right? We have, manslaughter, where you drive drunk and accidentally kill someone. You shouldn't have driven drunk. It is a crime. But that's very different from cold, calculated, premeditated murder. And murdering one person is different from mass murder. I think a special place in hell or for the death penalty is reserved for people like Timothy McVeigh or Osama bin Laden. As far as I'm concerned, I have no problem executing Timothy McVeigh and Osama bin Laden. Once I'm certain that someone is guilty, and I mean not just conviction beyond a reasonable doubt, but absolutely no evidence pointing to innocence, people like Osama bin Laden or Timothy McVeigh who've admitted to their crime, who are proud of their crime, execute them. I have no problem with that. You know, some Democrats do, some liberals do. Some liberals, and I respect them, including my former boss, Barney Frank, believe the death penalty is always wrong. Believe the state should never execute anyone. I respect those views. I respect those people. I don't share those particular views. I have no problem executing the most severe of crimes. But when you look at the case of a child rapist and you think about the practicality of it all, you can see that the child advocates have a point. One of the things that also the Supreme Court ruled today, actually I guess it was a couple days ago, was, I think, a very, very stupid decision. And, of course, it was drafted by Antonin Scalia. So generally anything he says, I disagree with, almost every single thing. But this is something that was supposedly pro-defendant. Scalia ruled that in the case of a woman who had gone to the police and complained about domestic violence from her boyfriend, that he pulled a knife on her, that he threatened to kill her, things like that, and 2 weeks later, the man shot her 8 times. She was dead. Now, his claim was that he shot her in self-defense. Shot her 8 times in self-defense. Now, that's pretty ridiculous as it goes. But it gets further ridiculous if when the jury was told that just a couple of weeks earlier she'd gone to the police to complain about domestic violence. Now, there is a provision in the Sixth Amendment to the United States Constitution that says you have the right to confront your witnesses, to confront your accuser. And so what that means is usually you can't bring in a dead man as a witness. The idea is you can't cross-examine a dead person. You can't find out if they're telling the truth under the crucible of hard questions. So you don't allow hearsay. But there have always been exceptions to the hearsay rule. For example, if someone gives testimony in the lawsuit, we generally accept that as an exception to the hearsay rule, or if a witness is unavailable. And one exception that's been used for a very long time is when the murder victim says, he's going to kill me, he's going to kill me, and is shot and can't come to court because she's dead. Well, we allow the evidence of her screaming, he's going to kill me, in. It's not her fault. She's dead. She's been murdered. Well, Scalia protected the murderer. Scalia and a majority of the Supreme Court ruled just a couple days ago that because there's no cross-examination, you can't allow a woman's police statement into the record, who is a murder victim. Now, look, I understand the reason for the rule. I support the Constitution. I get the Sixth Amendment. You should have a right to confront your witnesses. And if it's just hearsay, if it's just, oh, I don't know, hey, she said he was going to kill her, and now she's dead, if I say that on the stand, you know, that's different, I think, from a woman going into a police station of her own volition and giving a report to a neutral police officer. This isn't, you know, somebody making a claim. I heard her cry. No, this isn't traditional hearsay. This to me is much more like going before a judge and giving testimony. Look, the whole point of all of this goes back to what I said at the beginning, that if you destroy evidence, you're probably likely to have committed the crime. If you're innocent, why did you destroy the murder weapon? Why did you hide the body? Why did you clean up the blood? Right? Well, killing someone in order to get them to not to talk seems to me the clearest rule of all, that there should be an exception to let that person in. Someone died trying to warn us, and now we're not allowed to use the warning? Doesn't make sense to me. Doesn't make sense to me at all. And it takes me back to the case of the child rapist. After all, if we have a death penalty for child rapists, and we have that combined with Scalia's idea that we can't let, you know, testimony of a rape victim in if the rape victim is dead, and that's the law now. That's the law. The rape victim can cry out 1,000 times to 1,000 police reports, and none of them are admissible in evidence. The jury can't find out about any of them as long as you kill the rape victim. Now, if you're the murderer and you let the rape victim live, well, the rape victim can testify against you and put you in jail for life. Think if child rape were a death penalty offense. Now, you've raped a child. Okay, you wouldn't do this. I wouldn't do this. But put yourself for a moment in the mind of such a fiendish, evil man. You've raped a child. You know you're going to be executed if that child lives to talk on the stand. Even, maybe the child goes to his parents or her parents. Maybe she goes to the police. She tells her parents. She tells the police, he did it. He did it. He raped me. Generally, in cases of rape, there's only two individuals in the room, the rapist, the rape victim. You know, these things are rarely done in public. So an 8-year-old child tells her parents, you're the rapist, or tells the police, you're the rapist. And you know, and there's a case, right? And they're about to put you in jail, and they're about to try you. And that 8-year-old is the only witness against you. All you have to do is kill that child, and bingo. Bingo. Not only do you not get the death penalty, you're off the hook. You're scot-free. The danger of executing child rapists is not that I feel sorry for the rapist, but I worry about the victim. I worry about the child. I worry about all rape victims. And if the state doesn't treat differently a rape and a murder, there's every incentive to murder the victim. And so that Supreme Court decision is one I support. Toll-free number, 877-4-HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. If you want to comment on this or anything else, give me a call. We'll be right back after this.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive Magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can also grab off our website over at progressive.org. The Supreme Court just came down with a horrible decision on the right to bear arms. The conservative majority, including the swinger Justice Kennedy, have now conferred on individuals the right to own a handgun and maybe even a machine gun, because how the court down the road will wrestle with what regulations are permissible and what are not remains wide open. What Scalia did in his majority opinion was basically disregard the whole preamble about a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state. But that's what concerned the founders, the ability of states to defend themselves. In fact, as Justice Stevens notes in his dissent, the framers rejected proposals that would have broadened its coverage to include the civilian individual use of arms for hunting or for self-defense. And even 70 years of precedent from a unanimous Supreme Court that ruled in a prior case didn't bother Scalia and the so-called conservative majority either, because they aren't conservative. They're activist judges of the worst sort. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. You know, I was thinking about the sad idea that a rapist would do better to kill his victim than to allow the victim to testify if there were not this distinction between execution and life imprisonment. And it makes me think back to my civil law days and the old sick joke people used to make in law school, that if you run over somebody, this is civil liability, not criminal liability, but if I guess it could be if you're negligent. But anyway, you run over someone in a car, the smartest thing for you to do is back up, finish the job. Because, again, the living victim is more dangerous than the dead one. Look, it's an awful idea, and I don't want anything in the law to protect the greater evil of murder over the awful but still slightly lesser evil of rape. In terms of playing with the law,